Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross hanging out with you for, the next hour or so, or really however long we feel like it. It is our weekly delve into the news and entertainment and whatever else happens to cross our desk. What's going on, Rob?
Not much. It's incredibly hot. I'm sure you're getting it, too. It's somewhere in the 90s today. Yesterday was 94, but it was a drier, much more comfortable heat. Today, it's just humid and muggy. So here's my weekly complaint about New York weather and being surrounded by idiot tourists. It sucks.
And everybody go home.
Please.
Now,
nice. That's how much the heat is affecting me.
You know, before we started our little show for today, you happened to mention something to me about putting the air conditioners in and the fact that you haven't yet.
Correct. Usually it isn't that bad because our apartment is, it's in the quote sub-basement, which is really the ground level floor. And it's towards the back. And even though we get a lot of natural light, it isn't pounding in on us. So it doesn't make things worse as far as heat absorption goes. But the humidity creeping in is making it unbearable. And I usually can, you know, I can keep it. I can refrain from installing the air conditioners because I have two units. I live in an apartment, so I do it the old-fashioned way. I put them in the window and tape them up, and then I take them out sometime around the end of October.
Right. Well, and that just – it brought me right back to childhood because even though we've had – ever since we moved to Florida, have had central air and never had to worry about it, when I was a kid living in Buffalo, that's what we did is put in the window shakers. And I can remember – I mean, they were only up for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, August, you know, into early September, and that was it. For the rest of the time, we just slept with the windows open or had the heat on.
I think we would put them in – I would say around the middle of June, just before the official beginning of summer. Because, of course, back then, you knew when summer was actually coming. You right. had seasons, four full seasons. And we had a window unit that was permanently installed in the living room. That was a big one. That was a Frigidaire made by General Motors.
Right.
Because I lived in a three-bedroom house. We had Westinghouse window units. Mine was the cool one because mine had a sliding door that covered the front. So mine looked cool and bitchin'. But that was always the summer ritual that I never looked forward to because the height of the window was always kind of a pain in the ass. And I'd have to stand there while my father was on the outside trying to, you know, secure it, you know, with tape and screws and whatnot. And I'd be standing there going, Jesus, are we almost done yet? How about we get a level first?
Yeah. Right. Or when they don't fit the window and you have to put pieces of cardboard in, you know, just kind of shim the thing?
Yep. The thing is with these, I have two Kenmore units that I bought in 2002, and they're fantastic because they have the sliding pieces that will go from end to end to the windows. You know, pull them out, screw them in so that way they stay out, tape them down, and you're good to go. And the great thing is because literally outside, when you're standing outside my window, you're at ground level. So it's not like these can, God forbid, fall and hurt someone.
Right.
These don't require brackets, which now in New York City apartments, you have to have. I don't need them, which is a very helpful thing. They're also easily balanced, you know, because we have a large, you know, main window. So that way it tempers it where it's flat, you know, on the top of the air conditioner. So the air conditioner is at its proper, in a proper direction. So I'll probably do it on Saturday. This is the weekend of attrition for me. I have to, quote, get stuff done. Oil change, air conditioning, you know, regular guy stuff. Call me Monty Capoletti, you know?
Very good. Well, yeah, I just we didn't need them much because in New York City, unlike in Western New York, you get sunshine. And in Buffalo, even in the summertime, the sun doesn't shine much because of the water or the wind coming in off the lake, which also keeps everything cool. We never had to worry about it much.
You know, I wanted to bring something up because almost as quickly as we ended last week's show, one of the songs that we were talking about in that whole Memories of Summer.
Yeah.
Can't believe I let it get away from me, of all things, because it was huge for me, and I mean huge, in the summer of 79. the Little River Band reminiscing. How perfect is that?
Yeah, I remember it well.
That is the epitome of the proper 70s summer song, especially when you're a horny teenager.
Exactly, yeah. A little bit of a soul groove, but, you know, not too overwhelming, you know, not dancey or anything like that, just nice.
That Fender Rhodes piano gets you every time.
Absolutely. Beautiful stuff. Well done. And we'll get to more In Our Heads, of course, later on in this one, but got some more to get to in between now. And then in some of it affects my industry as a broadcaster, the fact that we are now seeing what we've seen in the radio industry over the last probably 25 years is nothing compared to what's going on the television side of things. And now it's gotten even worse because it was finally approved over Donald Trump's objections because he hates CNN. AT&T is now officially merged with Time Warner. It actually was a takeover. So now it's all AT&T. And the, you know, the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and on we go. But it's more consolidation. And of course, more consolidation means less competition. And that means bad news for us.
You know, I'm actually really upset about this because I worked for Time Warner by working for Atlantic Records and the Warner Music Group. And yep. I've witnessed what happens when the wrong company is involved. You know, when Time and Warner merged, that was one thing. When they brought in Turner, it made things infinitely better because you had not only the Turner networks joining the Time Warner family and studios, but that also brought in MGM Studios, which were owned by Turner. It brought in the sports franchises. It brought in the Braves. It brought in the Hawks. And it brought in the brand new Atlanta Thrashers. You know, when AOL came in, it destroyed everything. And it was also, and this is the most important thing, it was a company to be proud to work for. You know, they did right by their employees. They really did. I felt in the 6 years I worked there that I was treated like gold. We all did. And when AOL came in with their penny-pinching ways, it just destroyed everything, let alone the fact that we all wound up losing our jobs inevitably.
Right. Well, and, yeah. And even going back to, I mean, that gets shoved under the rug a lot, but that idea of being happy every morning when you get up and go to work because you appreciate the job that you're doing and you appreciate the company you're working for. Who has that at all anymore?
Few to none. You have to work, maybe. And I'm stretching this because I'm older and have been now through so many different careers, which I'll get to in a minute, the whole notion of changing careers versus changing jobs. Uh-huh. Younger people are a lot more malleable in a good sense, where they can kind of go with the flow of an atmosphere. But if you're a seasoned veteran like I am, you immediately pick up, intuitively speaking, on how an office atmosphere is prone to be.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult to find someplace that you actually get up in the morning and and enjoy going to. I'm lucky in that right now I'm in that state.
Same here. Right.
How long that lasts remains to be seen. And I say that not with cynicism, but because what starts out with best intentions often gets thwarted as it gets bigger.
Right. And cynicism and realism are very, very close to each other. So, yeah, there is an advantage in being a realist.
Very true. And I live with my feet firmly planted on the ground in both reality and rationality. So you have to be able to balance one with the other.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is just about changing college. You know, when you go to college, you're prepared for a career, singular.
Right.
Changing jobs within the framework of a career, albeit many times, as I often have done, I found out the happily easy way. What I chose to study and graduate with a degree in college did not mesh up with what I wound up quite accidentally, by happenstance, call it what you will, doing professionally for the first 16 solid years of my post-collegiate career. You know, I graduated with a degree in psychology and human relations, which meant I could go into either formal psych or I can go into public relations. And at the time, I thought, okay, you know, public relations might be kind of a happy medium, except for the fact that, one, I don't like people that much. And two, I wasn't enough of a politician, so to speak, that I was full of enough shit that I can go out and you know, lay the BS down on somebody.
Right.
Yeah. So it's good, people do.
Good for a psych major, by the way, to really dislike people.
Well, there you go. I mean, come on, I'm the course. Exactly. My loathing and contempt for humanity is far and well known.
Yeah, and the thing is, you talked about, you know, being happy where you are now and being in that situation and being one of the few, as I am. And what do we have in common? We both work for small companies.
Right. And the thing is, we've also done the – we've had that golden moment where you've been with that big company. You know, it's hard enough in life to get your dream job, especially in the modern world.
Sure.
I've now gone the trifecta because I'm on the third one. You know, that's why I say let us hope that it continues on this path, you know. But my first dream job, which I got after 6 years in the music industry, because that's where I wound up out of college, you know, unexpectedly and unplanned for, happily, like I said, and accidentally. But after 6 years of working for independent labels and music companies, I wound up at Atlantic Records, yeah. Which I spent the next 6 years of my life just enjoying every moment of it. You know, in to paraphrase Gordon Gekko, corporate rock is good. Corporate rock is right. So anybody who tells me corporate rock still sucks, fuck you.
Yeah.
You're just jealous. Well, we had the best looking women in the world. If you liked drugs, we had the best drugs in the world. We had you know, beer, wine, and every other form of liquor flowing every day. I barely paid a cent in 6 years to either get CDs or see shows.
Yeah.
Need I say more?
Right. Yeah, there are worse things. And it's the same thing with me. I mean, there's something great about getting that phone call. And this is the real disillusionment that life eventually hits everybody with. There's something great about getting that phone call that says, we're syndicating you and we think we can get you up to 100 stations by the end of the year. That's like one of those holy shit moments, because when that happens, the first thought is, it's the Sally Field thing. You like me. You really like me. You know, it's that validation. And you think, wow, all of the hard work that I put in, the 20 years I put in building this thing, is actually paying off because they appreciate what I do. And over time, you realize, no, they don't appreciate what you do. And none of that stuff matters. And there are more important things than that, you know?
Right, because they still call you Sister Bertrill or worse yet, Sybil. And when you walk by, they say, you'll wait till the very last note. Hold your water. You know?
Right.
It was a case of, I walked into Atlantic Records on a temp basis, you know, for the art department. And on the second day, I was called into one of the offices. And the person who was second in charge said, please sit down. I want to talk to you. And I was like, oh, dear, you know. And she said, we really like you and we'd like you to stay permanently. What?
Yeah, that's like, holy shit. Wow. I mean, what I used to worship likes me back.
You know, and the thing was, of course, this is long after the golden era of Atlantic Records, but when you walk down the hallway,
still,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It is true. You, if you're like we are, and you still have a sense of emotionality about it, you're walking down the corridor, and on the walls are all the gold records of everyone that graced that label, that did something spectacular, whether it was ABBA or Led Zeppelin or the Bee Gees.
Buffalo Springfield, sure.
Or Buffalo Springsteen or Bette Midler or Stone Temple Pilots or Collective Soul or Hootie and the Blowfish, you know, or Jewel. Run into her in the hallways for that matter. The point is that you got that thrill. You got the goosebumps. And I will tell you this much. When I went for my, quote, formal interview, because I had to go to the HR department, and the woman who was very nice said to me, well, and she had that forced plastic smile that all HR people tend to do.
Right.
I don't know if you know about Atlantic Records. So let's see. Founded in 1948 by the brothers Erdogan, Amit and Nesri, and their friend Herb Abramson. And I just kind of, like, ticked off all the high points. She said, I guess you're familiar. I said, you could say that.
Yep.
And that was it. I mean, that was it in a nutshell. It was a conversation, and I was in. And the first thing I did as soon as I came out and came back to my desk, and where were you? I was like, I just got hired. Oh, great. We're going out to lunch. I said, I'll see you guys later. I'm going over to Sam Ash. And I went out and bought the Epiphone Casino Sunburst.
Nice. Nice.
Look, if you're going to get hired at Atlantic Records, you're not going to fuck around. You're going to get your ass over to the guitar shop pronto,
yep,
and get that axe and come home with that axe and say, pride. Not that kind of pride. God damn it, you know. Beatles strong.
Yeah, absolutely. What a fantastic story. And so, yeah, what it comes down to is the corporatization, getting back to where we started with all of this, is in effect ruining that. And it's been ruining it for a long time. It's nothing new. But with AT&T and Time Warner, it's just when we have these mega giant corporations swallowing each other up, that means that there's nothing left at the bottom.
Very true. And the problem also stems from the fact that, let's go back again in history, AOL Time Warner merger. In the very bloody aftermath, what happened? Time Warner had to not only divest itself of AOL, which was a dying enterprise when they came in,
right?
Because it was so quickly antiquated, they also had to divest themselves of all their assets. They had to get rid of the sports franchises. So after how many years of Turner owning the Braves and the Hawks and the Thrashers had to be moved to Winnipeg.
Right.
They also divested themselves of the Warner Music Group, for God's sakes. They only have a tiny percentage of stock to allow them to still call themselves Warner Music. I mean, it's shameful, and it's painful, so it makes me think, what next? There's not that much left to carve up.
Right.
And AT&T is not exactly the best of carriers. I mean, I've been with AT&T now since 2005. I don't love them. I just prefer them over Verizon, and the rest are non-existent because Sprint is shit. So, you know, the bottom line is I fear that whatever is left of the Time Warner name is going to fade into oblivion like so many other great corporations have indeed done. Look, Chrysler is on its last legs.
Yep.
Again, even with all the bailout by Fiat, you know, nobody's buying Chrysler. Is Dodge possibly the next name brand to go? What does General Motors have? GM, Cadillac, and Buick. That's it. Chevrolet, yeah. Oldsmobile is gone. Pontiac is gone. Those are part of our fabric. We own those cars, for God's sakes.
Yeah, and with the car thing, I mean, you know, Jeep's not going anywhere. So you look at what else Chrysler owns, or Fiat Chrysler, or whatever the hell they're calling it now. And
I look at Jeep and I think right away AMC. You know, I want to see that little red, white, and blue, you know, stylized A on the back.
As long as we don't have to bring back the Pacer, everything is fine.
Hey, you know what? Say what you will, but it was the car of 1975, and it was the official car of the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah.
Who was high-themed in that first year that Tug McGraw pitched for them.
Any car that has an official Levi's edition with actual rivets on the seat covers, there's a problem there.
Look, all I want is a DeSoto. All right, Benjamin?
You know, I was at a car show a little while ago, and there was a 1972 or 73 Dodge Dart Swinger, because it had to be the Dodge Dart Swinger, with the mod top, which was a white vinyl top with flowers emblazoned all over it. It was the most hideous thing. It looked like your Aunt Jean's little card table that she has out on the back deck. That's what the mod top looked like.
You give me the counterpart, the Plymouth Valiant.
There you go.
And I'm a happy camper.
Love me a Valiant.
Absolutely. Give me the bench seats.
Yep.
Front and back. You know, give me ABC, you know, 77 WABC radio. Let's go. You know, we're in the car. We're listening to Paul McCartney and Wings. We're going to Long Island, you know, to go visit the cousins.
As long as it's not in my mom's 76 Granada.
Worse, we had the 76 Volare wagon.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, mom's car, she actually paid extra for the power locks and the lock buttons. The way that you locked the doors was everybody got out except the driver or the passenger in the front, and they push down on their lock button, and it locks all of them. And the thing was giant. It looked like a golf tee. It was the most ridiculous thing.
Man, ours was a dark forest green with the brown paper, wood paneling.
Oh, right.
So it was really hideous. You know, that was a clunker of a mobile, but man, it was the Volare. That was the car of the year. I mean, everywhere you looked, Volaris and Aspens were everywhere.
Yeah, with their rich Corinthian leather and everything.
No. That was the Chrysler Cordoba.
That's right.
Never, never, never forget Montalban.
fantastic ads. Yeah, we don't see stuff like that anymore. That said, though, you know, we should make note of the fact that another week has gone by and we're actually still breathing.
Yeah, I was going to say, hey, didn't we end last week's show on a kind of wryly, somber note, thinking that Armageddon is coming? Get your Bible, you know. But no, we not gone boom. Yeah. I mean, I got boom several times during the week, but that's a different kind of boom. But, you know, it's
Now you're just bragging. But I think
regularity is everything at this age. So.
I think now, you know, what we're really talking about, though, is the fact that we found the limit into the amount of time that you can allow Donald Trump to do any given thing without stepping on his own dick, which is about 43 minutes, because that's all the time they spent together. And we're still alive. So now we know that threshold is at least 43 minutes.
Right. Now, speaking of threshold, and he's still alive and we're still alive, but Larry Kudlow had a heart attack.
Oh,
yeah. I'm sorry. I have to laugh at that because that's called karmic justice number one.
Yep.
Now, when it's something bad happens to Stephen Miller.
Well,
you don't even have to say anything.
Hold on a second, though. Take a look at Stephen Miller. Something bad has already happened to him.
Yeah, no, first of all, okay. He looks like Goebbels, but he's a Jew. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's beyond fucked up. And I can say that because I'm a Jew.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, did you notice last week we went the entire episode without that?
Yeah, I don't think we had one.
Oh, I know. I mean, we're both here, but, you know. Yeah, and I found it really funny that you brought up you went to Catholic school, and I was going to say, considering you're a Jew.
Oh, yeah. No, I wasn't. When I was a Tampa Jesuit, and this is no lie, in my freshman theology class at Jesuit High School, which was taught by Mr. Paul, by the way, not John Paul. Actually, he was John Paul, come to think of it. That was his real name. But anyway, Mr. Paul taught us theology, and I wasn't even the only Jewish kid in my theology class. And there was only 20-something of us. But Greg Walsh, it was me and him.
Wow, that's impressive. What was his name?
Greg Walsh.
Yeah, that's a real Jewy name. That's yeah. See, that's the thing. Out of New York, I was having this conversation earlier today because we've got this new guy in.
Yeah.
And he's really blonde and Aryan looking. And his first name's Darren. And he looks like he belongs on a golf course.
Yeah.
But he's a Jew. He's a big Jew.
Wow.
Would you expect me to be a Jew? He's like, yeah, by your last name. I said, here's the thing. You're from New York. See, in New York, you can spot them. And, of course, I know how to professionally spot the Jew. That's, you know, it's like, you know, it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
You're saying you have Judar?
So I created Judar. I marketed it. But the thing is that outside of New York, you can't spot them. You know, they don't have them in England, per se, because everybody hates them, so they fake it.
Yeah.
Right? And in California is California, you know. And the same thing goes for Florida, you know. Jews in Florida, well, the New York Jews are in Florida, you can find them all together in one spot.
Yeah, Miami Beach.
Yeah, you know.
I want to go to Miami.
Complaining about Spitzen and the heat and all that kind of shit. In California, I mean, look, Chris and Rich Robinson are from Georgia. You think they're a couple of Hebes with a name like Robinson? Well, with the name Rabinowitz changed to Robinson, of course. But, you know, I know because I worked with a guy named Michael Robinson, and he shocked me when he said he was a Jew because he looked like a fucking weirdo Nazi, but, you know, he was a Hebe.
Yeah.
Point being that Stephen Miller, that's a creepy fucking guy.
Oh, yeah.
No uncertain terms. You know, never mind the evil concepts that he comes up with. He has absolutely no sense of human emotion, a pulse, or anything. He's the embodiment of a horror story creepy guy. He's like the evil scientist dude.
Yeah. Every time I see him, did you have a boxing clown? Do you know what I'm talking about? The inflatable.
Yeah, punchy.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think I hate clowns? Because I like punching them.
Exactly. And yeah, I have one too. And every time I see Stephen Miller, that's what I think of. He reminds me because his head is the same shape as the punchy clown.
Oh, I thought you just wanted to punch him in the face.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, that's
okay. He keeps it real, folks. He keeps it real.
Oh, which brings me to Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I have to tell this story because we were talking about this the other day, my lovely bride and I, and her name came up and Jen started getting really animated and really excited and really, I mean, because obviously Sarah had done something awful and we were talking about what a horrible person she is. And when my wife gets excited, she talks faster. And sometimes, in the process of talking faster, she trips over her words. So instead of saying Sarah Huckabee Sanders, what came out of her mouth was Sarah fucking Handlebars, which I think is a much better name for her.
Well, the fact that the Sarah fucking part is just, you know, that's a given.
And she didn't even mean to say it, which made it so much better. So now every time I talk about her, it's Sarah fucking Handlebars.
The thing is, the handle part sounds a little Jewy.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
Handlebar, Handelman.
Friedrich,
Handelman,
yeah.
You know, but God, what a fucking sow that woman is.
So bad.
But the thing is, she's an asshole. And, you know, everybody does that whole fruity thing about, you know, picking on her because she's a woman. Oh, no, it's not that. It's that she has numerous genetic defects. Like, she's a dick.
Yeah.
How about that? How come you can't call a spade with a woman? She's a dick. She's as much of a dick as Stephen Miller is a dick. Well, no, he's a bigger dick. But still, she's a bigger dick than what's her name? The Crypt Keeper.
Oh, yeah. Kellyanne Conwoman.
Right. I mean, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is a fucking retard. I've said it before, I'll say it again, and I don't care if I offend you. Not you. I mean, I'm not going to offend you. She's a fucking baggy-eyed galoot. A sow, you know? She's a moron. She's a dumb fucking hillbilly who barely can read. She can barely speak properly because when you listen to her in these press junkets, you know, she talks like she's on some kind of medication, you know? She's a turd, a human turd. What's wrong with calling a woman out for what she is? She's a fucking pig, just like Donald Trump and everybody else in that coterie of douchebags.
Right, and it's...
What's special about her? What, because she's a woman? Big fucking deal.
Yeah. No, I hear that accent coming out of anybody, and my first thought is, oh, you're a fucking rube. And she is, you know? It's that backwoods Arkansas stupidity, and what she does with it is turns it into, and I'm an asshole. So instead of having, you know, instead of answering questions, you know, I understand the job of the press secretary is to deflect wherever is humanly possible and not answer any questions. You know, I get that. But the belittling and the snotty shit that she does every time they open that microphone, and she's always just cracking on every member of the press corps. And it's not that I care about them so much. It's just, that's not your job. You're not Shecky. You're not a friggin' insult comic. Stop it and act like a professional.
Well, that's the problem with this entire...
Yeah, there isn't one. Profession. Yeah, right.
There's no sense of professionality, no sense of decorum, no sense of any respect for the offices that they all hold.
Yeah.
None of them. It's disgraceful. That's what bothers me, because it translates overseas.
Yep.
It goes right back to what we were talking about last week. You know, we're family. You can say what you will to me. You can punch me. You can insult my wife. Anybody outside does that, I'm going to get you.
Right.
I'm going to pop a cap because I don't want to hear it from people who have, you know, don't be throwing stones at glass houses, you European motherfuckers.
Right. And that's where, see, this little gambit that's being run right now over the immigration fight is it's turning into something uncontrollable for them. And I think they feel it. I think they're starting to get desperate because they're seeing not only Republican political support go away. This isn't polling well in the suburbs. They lose the suburbs, they're done. And it's not that long between now and November, and they know it. And you know, so right now, you're starting to see a whole lot of Republicans who feel like they may be in jeopardy, that their jobs may actually be a toss-up come November. And they're the ones who are starting to peel away because they can't afford to be tied to this shit. When you're watching pictures of little babies crying and holding their hands up to their mother who's in cuffs, that don't play well.
No. And the fact is, you know, visuals aside, it goes right back to what you and I have talked about many, many times, and you've put so brilliantly, the fact that the Republicans don't have a collective backbone.
Right.
You know, that's the problem with both sides. You know, you've got the Democrats who just have nothing.
They don't have a plan.
Their job is to tell you who to blame, what the problem is, no solutions, and bring out a dick like Bernie Sanders.
Right. If they do win in November, it'll be by default. It won't be because they did anything. It'll be the other side screwed up so badly that they won.
But then go through another 2 years of nothing getting done because they're going to obfuscate anything attempted again. And on the Republican side, these are all just wishy-washy, gutless you know, I want to keep my job, so I'll forget to do my job.
Right.
Scenarios. You know, and this is why the political game has made me so sick. But the thing is that people, and we know how it is on social media, because social media is a bit, it's the emperor's new clothes. It's a big empty nothing. But the fact is, when people try to pretend like they're oh so knowing and they click their tongues and say in such civil yet cold manners of how you're supposed to think, no, 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 no. Keep it to yourself.
Right.
We'll talk about music. We'll fight about the Mets versus the Yankees. We'll talk about how bad Solo is as a movie. But don't go into a political treatise because you really don't know what you're talking about. It's very easy to preach from high up on the hill.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, that's all they've got at this point. So it's going to be an interesting ride between now and the first week of November. And, you know, you mentioned going off into the sports direction as well. I know there's a lot going on in New York right now. Frankly, the Cardinals fans have already packed it in. You know, that's not rare, by the way. They've done that in World Series years before as well. But it's going to be a long, boring summer in St. Louis.
Yeah, and with the Mets, you know, I admit I don't hold much hope of anything. But I will say something, that the last two games showed me there's still a little fire in them. When they lost yet again on Friday, you know, it was another one-run game. They didn't score after numerous chances of having men on base that they could have taken that game against a team they beat in four straight. They'd beaten and swept Arizona at home. They played this series in Arizona. They lost one-run games yet again on Thursday and Friday. And on Saturday, they won handily, 5-1. The one run wasn't even much of a threatened run, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was because of an error. So that was, you know, one very good thing. And Steven Matz was very strong through seven innings. Yesterday's game, the Mets were down 3-2. No, sorry. They were down 3-1 going into the ninth inning. Of course, you know, it was 2-1, numerous chances again. Jairus Familiar, who's supposed to be their closer, came in the eighth inning and, of course, fucked it all up because he's a useless piece of shit. He just has nothing and gives up a run. So now it's 3-1. We're going into the ninth. Two men out, two strikes. Jose Reyes, who last week the Mets actually tried to coerce into retiring, okay, is up at bat. He bunts it. He drags a bunt down. And a misplay by the catcher. The ball was clearly going to roll foul. He goes and picks it up. And by that time, Jose's already, even though at his age, Jose legged it out and made it to first base cleanly. So you've got that for him. Okay. Now, Jose Bautista comes up to bat, two strikes, and then bashes one all the way to the wall, and it drops.
Ugh.
So he hits a double. Reyes scores, suddenly it's 3-2. Brandon Nimmo, who is playing in his first full season, comes up to the plate. I think maybe one or two pitches go by. And when I tell you, he launched one into the upper right field deck. And suddenly the Mets are leading 4-3. Right after him is Drubal Cabrera comes up and belts one dead center. 5-3. And the Mets came back and went, you know, won it. And, you know, for what it's worth, it's moments like that that hearten you.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like them blanking the Yankees last week on Sunday Night Baseball. Magnificent. First team to actually blank the Yankees this year, believe it or not. So I don't hold out much hope. We also don't have too many trade chips for when and if the fire sale begins. You notice I said when instead of if first, because there's going to have to be one. Unless this thing turns around, you know, Yoenis Cespedes is nowhere to be found. You know, the guy's going to go into DL the minute he opens his car door. You know, that's how useless he is.
Yep.
Now, on the other side of things, in the hockey world, the big watch is with the New York Islanders.
Oh, for Barry Trotz.
Barry Trotz may move to the Islanders as coach. Maybe. But also, the watch is on to see where John Tavares, the team's captain, will go. If he stays with the Islanders, if he moves to the Rangers, or if he goes elsewhere. The thought is, if you're just speaking in pure terms of logic, the only other place he would fit would be the Rangers. Not because the Rangers have the money. They do. The salary cap will not affect them, etc., because they have room to breathe.
Yep.
but it's the only place that's sensible for him to go to. Plus, he lives in New York and loves New York. Having said that, he also wants to stay with the Islanders. He wants to be an Islander for life. He's made the statement several times. Lou Lamoriello coming in is a very big draw and an enticement. The fact that they're getting a new stadium, they're getting a new Coliseum, but it's going to be by 2020, 2021. The idea of shuttling between Barclays Center in Brooklyn and the refurbished Nassau Coliseum is not all that appealing. But there's reason for him to stay. They've got a really great young core around him, and they're willing to make deals to make the team tighter and better. So if you're willing to take – if Lamoriello is willing to take those steps, and I believe he will, I think Tavares in the end stays put. I don't think he moves elsewhere.
It's going to be an interesting season. And, you know, I find myself now, even though we're into summer workouts and all of that with the NFL, paying almost no attention to it. I can't wait until football is back, but as far as what's going on right now, whatever moves and holdouts are happening, I just can't bring myself to care.
It's the summertime stigma, you know? I mean, you're not really thinking about hockey unless you're listening to the draft pick day,
right
around July 1st, because that's the same day that the trades are always made.
And we already know what the first pick is going to be, so there's not even any drama there.
Right, which is kind of sucks in that respect, because you love to, you know, get all amped up for that day. You don't know, okay, well, big deal, we're going to pick him first, okay, we do that. You know, it's kind of just a shrug of the shoulders.
Right.
But
at least the Cleveland Browns aren't picking first.
The one thing I'm curious about is, because I was reading, you know, again, with the Tavares possibilities, Tampa Bay dismantling because they need to jettison some contracts.
Yeah.
First and foremost, Ryan Callahan. That's becoming albatross. You're paying him X amount of dollars to not play.
Yeah, right.
And that's a total, you know, it's a drag. I loved him with the Rangers, but he was always hurt. You know, we got at least two decent years out of Martin St. Louis. So, okay.
Yeah, he was a good player. Well, so that said, you're going to have to bring me up to speed on this one. What the hell's going on in New York with this Uber driver?
Here's the problem. An Uber car is your own car.
Yep.
Whether you like Uber or not, it's the driver's car. The driver makes the rules. If he's uncomfortable with what's going on regardless, you know, you have to respect it. Otherwise, get out of the car. Pure and simple. You know, I don't care if it's, you know, me and my wife making out or something like that. If he says get out, get out. You don't turn it into a whole big, you know, I'm going to use an English word, kerfuffle, you know. But this is the kind of society we live in now. You know, everybody thinks they can do whatever they want, when they want, where they want. Can't you keep it to yourselves for a few minutes?
I just want to know what guy kicks a lesbian couple out of his car for making out. Because I don't know that dude.
Well, first of all, there are certain critique you have to have if you're not going to kick them out. And I will send you that list.
All right. I'll look forward to seeing it. Do not be the press secretary.
I have to veil this in a very, very proper manner, even though this is an uncensored show. We don't wish to offend, but the gentleman is of a certain group that frowns upon homosexual acts.
Got it.
But the point is, control yourselves. You know, you don't have to be making out in a fucking car.
Well, right.
Anybody who does that, you're just a stupid teenager looking for attention.
Yeah, but how many people are – I mean, did you ever watch it? What was it? Taxi Cab Confidential or whatever the hell it was?
Taxi Cab Confession.
That's right. Confessional, right.
What a dumb show. What a dumb show.
Oh, speaking of shows, I'm going to jump off onto an entirely different topic now. But, yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
If you bring up Letterkenny
I'm going to
pop your eyeballs out one by one. Eat his grapes. I did it to a guy in New Orleans, and I'll do it to you.
You are going to eat your words about that show. But that said, this is about something else. We were watching Netflix over the weekend. Actually, no, that's not true. Let me back off of that. We were watching Amazon. Fire? Yes, exactly. Fake news.
Thank you.
We were watching Amazon over the weekend, and there's a show I didn't even know about, but we were just kind of flipping through and finding out what their original offerings were. There's a show called Tin Star. Do you know about this?
No.
We ended up watching all of them. It's a cop drama, again, set in Canada, but calm down. It's not full of Canadians.
Folks, you can't see it right now, but I've just given him the dirtiest look. It looks so ill.
No, hold on. I just, in fact, yeah, the only thing the Canadian about it is just the exterior shots. It's the middle of nowhere in Alberta, but it could be any small town anywhere. Christina Hendricks is in it. And it's, like I said, it's a cop drama thing, but the cop is a guy who moved under mysterious circumstances from London to this little town in the middle of nowhere in Canada to be the chief of police there. That's Tim Roth. It's amazing.
Tim Roth is doing a see?
It's already done. It's already there, yeah.
This is why you see so many big names from movies suddenly making this trek into what I would consider specialized TV. That's with either the services like Amazon or Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a better chance of getting a steady gig.
Right. Yeah. And they're making good stuff. They're making quality. They're not making crap, you know?
Now you said this takes place a little bit south of Edinburgh.
Yes. As opposed to a little bit south of Saskatoon, which is another movie altogether.
I warned you last week. Don't be Canadian. You pushed it this morning on Facebook.
I was just having a slapshot moment, that's all.
Last time, I'm getting the bat. You think Deacon is bad? Oh, no. I'm worse.
Just wait till the maple syrup shows up in your mail. Then you'll be singing a different tune.
I have plenty of good maple syrup.
From Vermont, right?
Syrup. Yep. Maple syrup from Vermont.
Too much. But yeah, watch that Tin Star if you get a chance. I think you'll like that one. And
now what the hell are we talking about?
Just TV. Oh, okay. Before that, the lesbians in the Uber.
Yeah. People, I don't care if you're gay. Just fucking control yourselves. And that includes you, you horny teenage bastards. Don't go around being exhibitionists. Or unless you're trying yet again to get some kind of notoriety to make somebody's life miserable. The guy's doing a job. He's driving you to and from someplace. Keep it in your pants for just a few minutes on the ride. I know it's difficult, but people, grow the fuck up.
And never, under any circumstances, should you ever tell the driver that you hate the fucking Eagles, because you're just asking for it at that point.
You tell me you hate the fucking Eagles and you're getting a beat.
See, there it is. So what else is going on?
You're making me hostile tonight.
Yeah, now you're saying it in a hostile tone.
Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Grayson. Let me tell you something. You're out of order.
This whole process is out of order.
It's all nickel and dime, Arthur. Folks, you really need to bone up on your cultural history here.
We have
just masters of this.
We have lost complete control. That's what it really is. It just sounds like some kind of controlled chaos, but there's no control at all.
Well, let's talk more about New York, because yet again, Mayor Fuckhead.
Oh boy, yeah, what'd he do now?
He claims with so much bluster and braggadocio. Notice I brought some real class just now into the proceedings.
Yes, you did.
With that word. That New York City will indeed take care of the NYCHA housing after the federal intervention. All the scandal that has plagued him, because all of his cronies who have not done a single thing for all the people that have to live in that shit, day in and day out, year after year after year, under your so-called watch of protectionism, since you are such a champion, especially of the black folks, you haven't done fuck all for them. And now you're going to clean this up? Sure.
Well, it's amazing what a federal investigation can accomplish.
Think for one second this fucking asshole's going to do anything. The guy can't get out of bed without creating some kind of scandal. It sickens me, because he's allowed to have it's no different than, you know, when people get on Trump. They should be getting on de Blasio with an equal amount of venom.
Right.
Because the guy does nothing. But he'll tell you how great he is, and he'll wag his finger at you, and he'll belittle you, just the way Trump does. There's no difference between the two.
Right.
One's fat and one is skinny. That's it. It's like Laurel and Hardy of douchebaggery.
Yes. Well, but the problem is different teams, different helmets. And so, you know, we can love one and hate the other with abandon.
There's nothing just about that. You know what I say? There are lots of bad hombres on both sides.
Exactly. Oh, it's just so pathetic. And, you know, I got hammered on by some idiot on social media this week. And no, I'm not whining about it, by the way, because I really don't care. But the whole point of it was, well, you know, hatred is all consuming and you shouldn't hate. Well, you know what? I hate being lied to. I'm never going to do anything but hate being lied to. So don't get on me for that. And yeah, some things you should hate.
You know something? Whoever said that, I hate him.
Well played, sir.
I will tell you something else. Let your hateness consume you, and soon your journey to the dark side will be complete.
Exactly. Well, you know,
hate is good. Hate is motivating. And right now, if you want to talk about hate, look at how the Democrats act. Look at how they excoriate everybody within their own ranks if you don't agree with them in lockstep over every single thing.
Right.
They're a hate-monging group like I have never seen, and I say that with no glee. That's why I completely removed myself from the Democrat as a member of the Democratic Party, and my political voting card says no political party affiliation.
Yep.
Period. They are an embarrassment and a scourge. At least with the Republicans, you have always known what you're going to get. They are consistent. They are like meatloaf, mashed potatoes, gravy, and peas and carrots on a plate. You're going to get the same thing every time, time after time, whether you like it or not. But they're consistent. These people veil their absolute loathing and contempt of everybody who doesn't think like they do. And it's a mindfuck of the highest caliber.
Right.
And that's why I am so exhausted when assholes say things like, you shouldn't hate. Bullshit. Fuck you. And mind your own business.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I will find you and I will cut you just on that principle alone.
When somebody says dumb shit like that, in my mind, that's the only time when you can raise the specter that we talk about here all the time. That's the only time you can say, really? You shouldn't hate? Okay, Nazis. Really? Tell me you don't hate them.
Well, Nazis are misunderstood. Really?
No,
I think
they're not.
Pretty clearly.
Yeah.
I didn't have to be a Jew to understand that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's not much to understand about being shoved onto the train to Poland. So, don't give me that shit about you shouldn't hate. Yeah. It's all consuming. So is corruption. So is fascism all consuming.
Right. So is the way the media plays these games nowadays.
Right. They still won't call him a liar. They still will not call him a liar.
But, you know, it's not even so much Trump. It's the way the media is manipulating everybody so that I feel like the media right now has become the focal point for why we have so much of a social, almost like a social segregation.
Yeah.
You know, because they're pitting black against white, gay against straight, male against female, Jews versus everybody right now. You know, anytime you hear about some kind of horrific act committed as an act of terrorism, especially overseas or when it comes to bombs or any of that kind of stuff, and it happens to be somebody who's Muslim, shouldn't hate the Muslims. You know, you're trying to explain away the psychosis that those groups carry. You give time of day to people like these Nazis, these actual, quote, American Nazi Party members who are running for public offices, but then you try and justify their being there. You know?
Right.
This is all media shucking, and the media are the ones responsible for it. It's like, here's a perfect example. Tonight is one of the most abhorrent things on television because, first of all, it's a joke. Nobody gives a flying fuck about awards shows anyway.
Yeah, right.
MTV Movie and TV Awards, in which they're going to honor, and I'm using the words in quotation marks, Chris Pratt and some woman named Lena Waithe. I have no idea who she was. Okay, Chris Pratt you may know from Parks and Recreation.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Right. He's about as interesting as an American cheese on white bread with mayonnaise sandwich.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, nice guy. I don't have a problem with him. Certainly seems like a nice guy, but you're going to honor him. That's one. This Lena Waithe. Wow, guess what, John? She's a black lesbian. Ooh. What's so groundbreaking about her? What's so special about her? Who gives a fuck?
Yep. You know, do something.
Right. What, you're making movies that nobody's seen, or you write stuff that nobody gives a shit about, except a very small coterie of people. Maybe all of these people, everybody who does this kind of specialized stuff, should wake the fuck up and realize, guess what? I'm part of something bigger.
Right.
You know?
But
it's not this intracommunal bullshit. I write about the things I know. Well, then maybe you need to broaden your scope a bit more.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I was just watching a special about George Lucas. He of course, only wrote what he knew as well. You know, space battles and shit. But the thing is...
what do you call it? Racing a piss yellow... piss yellow coupe down a, you know, road next to a field car.
Right, right. But what gets missed, and I, you know, we hear even the guys on the news spit this rhetorical question out all the time, saying, well, why is it like this? Why are we so divided? Why is everything an us versus them political argument? And of course, they ignore their own part in that. But that's not even the real answer to the question, because I'm not one of these people who sits around blaming the media for everything and thinking that they're the ones who cause us to do shit, because they don't. But the real reason why we're as divided as we are is because being divided makes people angry, because there's us and then there's them. And so people have to fight it out and decide which is right, us or them. And what do angry people do?
There's a number of things. I mean, first of all, people like to be angry, I think.
But for the people fomenting, well, you're right. But for the people who are fomenting the divide, people who are angry buy shit. People who are angry buy a lot of shit. They buy a lot of shit they wouldn't buy if they weren't angry. So
and they don't really afford either. So it puts them in debt.
Right.
While they're going and buying shit to feel better.
Exactly. And not only are they buying shit to feel better, they're buying shit to make the other side feel worse. Because if I'm motivated for a cause, I'm going to go out and spend money on that cause. And that's why this is like it is. That's why everything is designed to make us more and more pissed off at somebody who lives down the street that we're probably never going to talk to anyway, is because it makes us go out and buy shit. And it makes us watch the news more. And why do we watch the news? From the news gatherer's standpoint, the reason why we watch the news is so that they can sell us shit during the commercial breaks. So
if you actually condensed any TV program without the commercials,
yeah,
they're less than an hour long because there's so many commercials in between. And it's for the same shit over and over and over again. Now, you watch some crap like MTV, and I watch MTV for my favorite pile of crap. I'm like anybody else. I'm a human being. I like my train wreck TV and my diversion from daily life.
Yep.
So I watch Jersey Shore religiously. Don't even go there, because I'm telling you right now, I'm from Staten Island. I know people.
Fair enough.
Okay? I watch Jersey Shore, and I swear to God, it's the same five or six commercials over and over again, which every single show, there's no difference.
Right.
There's this stupid group called The Truth Is Out There. And no, it's not an X-Files commercial. It's this ridiculous anti-smoking campaign that they try to palm off as being a racial thing. You watch it and you're gonna want to kick the fucking TV in.
Uh-huh.
My darling bride is one of the calmest and nicest people on the planet. She sees it and she's foaming at the mouth.
Yeah.
She's ready to commit murder. You know, it's the same stupid shit. This is also the network that's there. They're trying to end smoking once and for all. But meanwhile, they're the ones applauding themselves because they've got a real ratings winner in something like Teen Mom 16 and Pregnant, Teen Mom 2, The Next Generation. So you're championing going out and getting knocked up when you're a teenager. You are the biggest bunch of hypocritical cunts on the planet.
Yep.
Catfish, a show about stalkers, basically, and liars and bullshitters who try and entrap people, duh, in fake profiles on, you know what, that's a tragedy's waiting to happen. Oh, and by the way, their ultra PC, you know, precious petal main guy, their host, he's under investigation right now for sexual abuse. Good. There's justice for you.
Okay? Great.
Take your fucking trans rights shirts and shove it up your ass. Okay, white boy?
Yeah. Well, and there was another one. There was another guy who was accused, and I'm trying to remember who it is now, actor, I guess, of some kind, who is somehow related to the Patty Hearst family. Have you heard about this one?
No, but I heard about Chris Hardwick, which came down yesterday.
That's him. Right. Yeah, the guy from At Midnight.
Wait. Chris Hardwick's related to Patty Hearst?
Yeah. The woman that he married who accused him of all of this shit, or that was his girlfriend, is a relative of Patty Hearst.
Huh.
And Patty, for some reason, is on his side. And
well,
and penned
his relationship ended 3 years ago. He's married to someone else
right now.
Right. You know,
oh, maybe this, that's what it is. Maybe his current wife is related to Patty Hearst.
This smells a lot like sour grapes to me.
Right. And that's what she was saying, is that, you know, this thing has turned into exactly what we've been talking about, which
is not right. It's the bullshit movement of women who've been wrong. Now they want revenge.
Right. And all it takes, again, you have to see how easy it is. And you have to see what they don't see is the, you know, like with the Bill Cosby accusers, the 20 years worth of shit that they had to go through to get to this point. And so now they see it as what it is, that the narrative of the day is always believe the accuser first, regardless of what the evidence says. And that's a dangerous place to be for anything. You know, you shouldn't make any kind of assumption whatsoever. You should take an accusation and look into it and find out what the evidence says, period.
The moment right now and the mindset is always shoot first and ask questions later.
Right.
Maybe you'll get to the truth at a point.
Yep.
But, oh, sorry we destroyed your career. Sorry we destroyed your life. Sorry we dragged your name through the mud. Sorry we publicly humiliated you.
Right.
Because women are never wrong. You know, everything is – it's your fault and it's my fault because we're white male heterosexuals. Yeah, and we're blamed for everything.
It is his current wife, by the way. Chris Hardwick, who we're talking about here, is married to Lydia, who is Patty Hearst's daughter.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
And on the flip side, you know, the doyen, the leader, if you will, of the or the spearheader of the whole hashtag MeToo movement, little Rose McGowan. Oh, sweet little Rose.
Oh,
Rose
she's
McGowan. What happened with Rose McGowan, John?
Was she busted for cocaine, was it?
Was that it? Was she popped by the cops, the white lady? Was she doing a little bit of Peruvian marching powder, a little tooth?
Well, no, you know it wasn't really hers, right? I mean, at least that's what she says.
Stole it for a friend?
Yeah, of course, you know, like anybody would.
Because she's just poor little Rose McGowan. First of all, I wouldn't let – never mind. You know what? I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah.
We're going to go into a completely different realm that I just want to excoriate her for being so full of shit. But she is full of shit.
Yep.
And she's a fucking junkie as it is. And she was doing drugs when she was with Marilyn Manson too and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to hear it. I really don't want to hear it. She's the last one I put any stock and faith in when it comes to any kind of realities.
Here's the funny thing. I have never been a fan when it comes to women that you're attracted to. Everybody has their type, right? And some of us have two or three. But I have never been attracted to the Barbie doll thing. You know, the blonde hair and the you know, the perfect hairdo and all of that shit. It never was something that I thought was...
You don't like the Aryan Shiksa type. I got you.
Yeah, exactly. So Rose McGowan is actually a lot closer to what I look at and go, say, or at least she was when, you know, before she was taking enough heroin to choke a horse.
And before she put those big old lips on.
Right. Yeah. All the stupidity of the plastic surgery shit.
Everybody who does this, everybody who's a member of the Me Too, it should be for the plastic surgery movement.
Yeah. Right. I'm still waiting to see the plastic surgery that I look at and go, oh yeah, that was a really good idea. No.
Yeah, I've yet to see it.
No.
Not a one.
But
it destroyed a woman as perfect as Priscilla Presley.
Yes, exactly.
One of the most gorgeous natural beauties on the planet, and she ruined that face.
But the reason I said that about the Barbie doll thing is that we were talking about this earlier today. There are people, Hollywood types, who get in trouble. And... I know this comes as a great shock, but there are some of them you look at and go, oh, not him or not her. And then others, you're just like, oh, yeah, I knew you were trouble. And earlier today, Heather Locklear was taken away by family members because she was threatening to blow her own head off. And that's her words, by the way. That's what they told the cops when they called 911. So she's off to have a little talk with the animals for a while. And she, to me, is one of those people, even though it's not like I never thought of Heather Locklear as, you know, everything that everybody else did. She's very pretty, but that's just not my type. So, but I have more sympathy for her because of the shit that she's gone through than I ever would for somebody like Rose McGowan. Fuck her, you know?
Right. You look at the lineage of what's gone on, especially in Heather Locklear's life over the last several years. It seems she has a drinking problem.
Right.
That's one of them. It's led to mental problems. And you know what? She's never caused anybody any harm. She seems like a very genuinely nice person. I've never heard a bad word about the woman.
Right.
Period. After a 35-plus year career. Okay? None of these, oh, you know how she got that job kind of. No, you never got any of that kind of crap, you know? What was her one mistake? Probably Tommy Lee.
Yeah.
Richie Sambora, I don't know so much about, but, you know. But then again, he's a member of Bon Jovi, so we'll just stop.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, Heather Locklear seems like a really nice person. You can only wish her well and hope that she gets the proper treatment so that way she can just pull herself together and enjoy her life.
Right.
Because she's worked really hard and she's earned it.
But Rose McGowan gives me, and maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just the fact that I look at her and go, oh, there's no hope. She is going to pull this shit until she either dies or becomes such a problem that nobody will work with her.
Well, the problem is the fact that when you come into even an industry as an asshole with this whole, I'm the it person of the moment, whether it's a guy or a chick, you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, what have you done? What have you done to earn it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What is Rose McGowan's towering achievement at this point?
Right. The answer is none.
Right. Right. Okay.
What? Bit parts in Tarantino films?
Yeah.
Rose McGowan, who's just such a signal of virtue, let us not forget that she is the reason why director and writer Robert Rodriguez got divorced. She's the homewrecker.
Oh, no kidding.
I know it takes two.
Right.
But she is 50% of the culpability.
Yeah, nice, Rose.
So fuck her. Just fuck her. So that's, you know, I got no sympathy for her, and I hope that they indict her. And well, no, actually, she was indicted.
Oh, was she really?
Different than being popped by the cops. You're indicted. Shit be going down, son.
Yeah, and the fact that she actually even bothered with, oh, that's not mine. Just
what a tool.
Unbelievable.
From the extreme of stupidity to the extreme of white bread, and let's talk about our brother D.W. Dunphy's very fine article on why the Carpenters were never cool.
Yes.
Because they were cool. I'm sorry. I know there was that whole thing in the 90s where kitsch was kind of in, and the 70s were back, and, you know, everybody was digging that tribute album that all the hipsters, you know, got into, like Sonic Youth doing Superstar and all that, and suddenly made the Carpenters cool. No, the Carpenters were never cool.
Nope.
The Carpenters were one step up on the rung of listening to Ray Conniff and Percy Faith. You know, you want to blow your fucking brains out listening to this white bread marshmallow music. And out of breath from my tirade.
If you raise the specter of Air Supply.
It's more in the same lineage of absolute suckage.
Yep.
Okay. Air Supply sucked beyond Christopher Cross.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of our friends on Popdos dig yacht rock shit, but Christopher Cross sucked logs.
Yeah.
That's to it.
No argument.
I can dig shit like, you know, Baby Come Back. Okay.
Right.
Player, 1976, 77. Obviously, like I said before, reminiscing, Little River Band, you know. Don't Fuck With Me, I Love the Eagles.
Okay.
Right? A lot of mellow gold of the 70s. But you're going into a very murky area when you listen to horseshit. Like, you know, Sitting on Top of the World, Looking Down on Creation. Right, right. The next stop is, you know, the train where you hear that fucking Whenever I See Your Smiling Face. James, go back on the heroin. It's the only thing that's any good.
He definitely wrote better songs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You fucked it up. You got clean. You left Carly Simon. No go. That's all there is to it, you know? But goddamn, the Carpenters, really?
I'm going to make you happy. You know who else goes in that mix? Now I get to pick on a Canadian. Anne Murray.
Oh, God, yeah.
Ugh.
God, you know, When I Needed You.
Oh,
God, that's one of those sappy, fucking, really heavy-duty maple syrup, sappy, saccharine, sweet song that make you want to put a .44 caliber in your mouth and blow your brains out.
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? You know, when she did shit like Danny's song, oh, God.
Right.
Oh, but, man, she ruined everything with When I Needed You. Oh, oh.
But back to Dunphy. Back to Dunphy and the Carpenters, though.
All right, fair enough. Because I was going to say, as much as I wanted to love, we'll always love Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah.
Ugh, her songs were shit.
Yes, they were.
I mean, with the exception of If Not For You, which had a country vibe to it and showed promise, she went right down the toilet into sap. Please, Mr. Please.
Ugh.
I honestly love you. Olivia, I love you too, but Jesus, you're killing me here.
Zandu.
That's why she killed herself by doing, physical. Because
oh, yeah.
I don't Grease for anything. Grease. The only thing about Grease that was worth its while was her in the outfit.
Well, and that was right. Exactly. Yeah. The outfit at the end of the movie, the black leather spandex shit, whatever it was. But, you know, that time too was when there was a lot of that sort of country crossover. The female vocalist thing was starting to happen again. And yet all it did was spit out a bunch of one hit wonders outside of Olivia Newton-John. Who did you have? Juice Newton.
She's the 80s, though.
That's but what I'm talking about. When Olivia did Physical, that was what, 1980 or 81?
Yeah, 80. You're right.
So, you know, and right at that time, that's when Queen of Hearts came out. And remind me, did she write that and Dave Edmonds covered it, or was it the other way around?
Oh, it's a good question. I don't remember.
I think Dave Edmonds wrote it.
I think Mike Nesmith shot the video, so at least we'll give her some...
there you go. A little bit of credibility.
Come on, Angel of the Morning, her cover is kind of good. Because the original version by Merrily Rush and the Turnabouts, that's kind of, but, you know, she kind of gave it a little bit of meat.
But what else was right there, though, was Kim Carnes.
Rod Stewart drag, basically. Well, you know what? Kim Carnes and Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Bonnie Tyler with the heartache, but then one of the most insipidly, and I want to know who wrote Total Eclipse of the Heart. Was it Steinman?
I don't know. I want to punch the face.
You know, there's only one version to listen to, and it's the Dan Band version.
Agreed. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. It's like, yeah, the only thing that I can take is when somebody like me first in the Gimme Gimmies come along. And
But the thing is, you know, in the 70s, you had Linda Ronstadt. You had, you know, Ann Wilson of Heart, you know.
Right.
You had Debbie Harry in the latter half of the 70s. You know, but this Carpenter shit was just abhorrent, you know? I don't know. Maybe it was because women singers then weren't, quote, marketable. I don't know. Did it have to be built on sex appeal? I really want to hear fucking Melanie Sofka singing, "I got a brand new pair of roller skates, you got a brand new cape."
Or lay down candles in the rain, yeah?
You know what? You lay down in the rain and drown, okay? Fucking hippies, go away, you know?
And
you know, Joni Mitchell was too much of a broader artist that, with the exception of Help Me, she wasn't going to really be making the pop charts. It's not a knock on her. She didn't have time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Well done. I wonder if Karen hadn't died as young as she did, if they wouldn't have been forgotten.
Regardless.
Yeah. You know,
if she were alive, they would have been a footnote.
Yeah.
I will give them this much credit. They actually had the audacity and gutsiness to cover in one of their last albums a song by, of all things, Clay 2.
Really?
They did. Yeah. They covered the Clay 2 song, Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft.
Okay.
I mean, that's audacious. I will give them their credit where it's due.
Yeah, given their audience.
But the
sure.
thing is, the Carpenters really didn't have anywhere to go. I mean, that's that, you know, Carly Simon was another one in that era of, you know, flat, you know, not particularly. I mean, yeah, I know there was also supposed to be this whole, you take the, you know, you take something like the Carpenters and all that nice music because it's the post-Vietnam era, the post-Nixon years and all of that. And you put a little bit of, you know, makeup on it, make everybody feel a little better. Yeah, but it's boring as shit.
Yeah, you know? Right. And that's the one thing that always bugged me about that is when people who are defenders of the Carpenters will say, oh, yeah, well, you know, you may not like their music, but you have to admit, she has an amazing voice. It's like, I don't care. She's singing shit.
Well, with amazing voices who don't get the kind of, what do you call it? The kind of accolades that Karen Carpenter does. She had a fine voice. She wasn't the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
I mean, you want to hear great women singers, you can find them really easily. I just named a couple. You know, listen to Joni Mitchell and listen to the – and I know people harp on about her. But, you know, she's someone who goes from strength to strength and range to range.
Right.
You know, she's an all-around singer, songwriter, artist, you know?
But the song is important. And that's that. Right, that's the point, is that Elvis had a beautiful voice, too. I don't want to listen to the man sing opera, ever.
Right, and thank God he never did it.
Yeah, right.
He came perilously close with something like Hurt, but, you know, the guy had a voice. He could pull it off. Plus, he was Elvis fucking Presley. He's the king of rock and roll and why we're here. And speaking of which, now I'm going to segue into the sad moment of the week because we lost DJ Fontana, Elvis's drummer.
Yep.
The man who put the swing in Elvis's sound, who put that beat. When you hear, to me, his shining moment, because the production is so good, their version of My Baby Left Me, it was just Elvis, Scotty Moore, Bill Black, and DJ Fontana in the studio doing another Big Boy Crudup song, My Baby Left Me. You just listen to the way Scott DJ's playing the drums, the syncopation on the beats. He's so on the one.
Right.
And see, that's the beauty of the way that band played, because they were tight as a drum. No pun intended.
Well, you know this because we've talked about this album endlessly, but in fact, there's a couple of them. In all of the records that Harry Nilsson made during the 70s on which Ringo played drums, he was not credited as Ringo Starr. He was credited as Richie Snare. And the reason why he had that, you know, that syncopated snare sound dates right back to the Elvis Presley records. That's what he was listening to. That's where he copped his style from.
Right. You know, I mean, granted, Ringo wasn't the best drummer in the Beatles.
No, yeah, right. As he would freely admit.
Exactly. I think the accolades for that goes to Paul, hands down.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But I mean, just listen to Ben on the Run. Paulie can play the fucking drums.
How about Abbey Road?
Yeah, but still. Listen to Band on the Run.
Yep.
Him playing the drums on that track, that mini opera.
Right.
That masterpiece for all time. That's for all the Wings haters out there. you know, DJ Fontana was the absolute anchor. So between him and Bill Black's slap bass,
right.
Forget, that was the perfect rhythm section.
That's lethal. That's absolutely lethal.
And that was in a period where there was no such thing as production values. You know, throw a mic up, turn on the machine, and everybody is in the room and playing at the same time. If you can capture that the way Sam Phillips first did it and the guys at RCA later did it in those earliest of records, that is for all time.
Yeah.
So we salute DJ Fontana.
Not only him. And yeah, there is one other one in the Sad Goodbyes column this week, because fans of the Blues Brothers well aware, but of course his career was much more long and storied than just that one movie. But yeah, Matt Guitar Murphy died this week at age 88. And it was Tom Bones Malone, of all people, who was the first one to put that up on Facebook this week. And I remember seeing it and thinking, you know, there's another one. There's another one of those indelible imprints on music. And if you spent time in the late 70s through the early part of the 80s at any kind of blues or soul music concert, chances are better than not that you saw Matt Guitar Murphy on stage, because he was everywhere. You know, he recorded some, but his impact was much more felt on the road.
Well, you know what it is? You know, he was somebody, well, first of all, he just wanted to get away from the kitchen.
Yeah, right. But he was so solid, and so solid live. The guy was unflappable.
He was a very fluid player. I personally thought he was the best thing next to Cropper.
Yeah.
And of course, Duck. I mean, you had those three up front.
Again, lethal. Right.
You know, and it's funny because I heard the Blues Brothers just the other day on the radio. Of course, it was Rubber Biscuit, but still.
Yeah.
You know, I. You know what? That's one of those moments where there's not much you can say. I mean, the guy was 88 years old, and he played out of love.
Yep.
He was a purist. That's what a blues purist is, going back to our conversation last week. You know, not Eric Clapton. Matt Guitar Murphy was the embodiment of blues purists.
Right. Yeah. And was it a 335 that he played in that movie? I don't even remember. I know it was something hollow.
Yeah. I think that was his signature guitar, actually.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing with Cropper. Every time you look at Cropper, he's always playing a telly.
Yep.
From the beginning to now.
Right. Yeah. So again, sad goodbyes all the way around to them. And you know, for the first time in a long time, we don't really have that much new music to talk about this week. I know we're going to have some next time around, but
we're just in a dry period, you know? I mean, there's a lot of things that have been submitted, but there's nothing particularly exciting, nothing that you know, I feel a sense of wanting to rave about. Although I'll give a quick shout out to, there's a series here in New York called The Loser's Lounge, which is done every couple of months over at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater,
mm-hmm.
which is to be right around the corner from where I work now. And I've been to Joe's Pub more times than I care to count. It is fantastic. Great atmosphere, great space to see a band or a solo performer, great food. I've seen Bob Mould do his acoustic shows there. I have seen Richard Barone do numerous acoustic and band shows there, right? I haven't seen Losers Lounge yet. They started it with, I think, For the Love of Harry was the first one, a Harry Nilsson tribute.
Yeah.
They did one for Squeeze. They did a Husker Du one, which I threw my name in the hat so I could perform at it. I was a little late. Had I known, I would have probably gotten in. But you get it. They do all of these. So they just did one to Tom Petty. And Richard Barone performed at it, amongst others. So I just wanted to give a quick shout out of, hey, wish I could have been there for it, but do one of the Love and Spoonful. I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, in honor of the fact that one of my conversations this week for an upcoming broadcast, in fact, no, that's not true, it aired today, was a conversation I had last week with, of all people, Edgar Winter. And I found out during that interview that when your job is as an interviewer and your subject is Edgar Winter, plan on getting maybe 2, possibly 3 questions in any hour because the man likes to talk, and that's great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Cool. I didn't expect that, because more often than not, you get people who either want to cop an attitude when being interviewed. They go into interview mode.
Yeah. Right. None of that.
That's really good to hear.
Yeah.
That's
really good to hear. But it was so much fun, and it was just, you know, listening to his enthusiasm, because I didn't even look up how old he is. Got to be, what, 72, 73?
About that? Maybe so. Were he and Johnny twins, or was one older than the other?
Nah, I think Johnny was a little older.
Because Johnny died at what, the age of 71?
Right, and that was 2010. So, God, yeah, so Edgar'd have to, he'd have to be at least 74, 75. Okay. We'll have to look that up, because I don't want to insult the dude. But still, you wouldn't know it. It sounded like I was talking to somebody my age. And his enthusiasm for it and his love of going out on the road and getting, not everybody hates the road, but getting up on stage and playing a show, it's still there. He can't wait to get on stage. And there's something magic about that. But, you know, even though he's an accomplished guitar player, obviously he backed off of that and let his brother take the lead. And then later on, people like Steve Lukather and Rick Derringer that he played with a whole bunch. So, you know, he was always messing with something else, keyboards, drums, bass, whatever needed playing, he would go and figure out how to play it. And so I figured for the In Our Head segment this week, we would talk a little bit about that. And those guys who, like Paul McCartney, are such accomplished multi-instrumentalists, the kinds of guys you can throw anything at. And I knew a dude when I was a teenager, a guy that I worked with at a sandwich shop, of all places, at a Subway, who was like that. I mean, you could pick up a balalaika and hand it to him, and 10 minutes later, he's playing something, you know, that you recognize on it. And those people always frustrated the shit out of me because I can't do that. But still, there's enough of them out there who have made their name in rock and roll over the years that I figured we could talk about at least a couple of them.
McCartney being the first and foremost.
Of course.
I think he was the first one, if I'm correct, who played all the instruments himself on his first solo album.
Yep.
I don't think anybody had done that before him. You know, all the drums, all the keyboards, all the, you know, bass guitars, acoustic guitars, you know, whatever he could throw into the stew. And in times when Wings was minus a drummer or guitarist or both, he stepped up to the plate and he did it with loose-limbed aplomb.
Not only that, but, you know, again, on stage, on the road, anybody who's seen McCartney play knows that when he grabs that Les Paul, that left-handed Les Paul gold top, something amazing is about to happen.
He's Paul McCartney. I mean, that's, and by the way, right, you know what today is? It's Paulie's birthday.
Is it really?
It is Paulie's 76th birthday. Big shout out to Sir Paul. We love you.
That's really funny. I'll tell you why in a minute.
Sure. There aren't that many that I can really think of with clarity. I'm sure it'll hit me later.
Yeah.
That did it with the same kind of, wow, that's just him kind of scenarios. Grant Hart was one of them.
Okay.
Dave Grohl is another. I mean, obviously, listen to the first Foo Fighters record. That's all Grohl. There's no band.
Yeah, right.
That's Grohl. Grant Hart pretty much did it throughout all of his solo records, you know, which is great. I mean, he was a really good drummer, but he was a really good guitarist and a really good keyboard player. And his whole thing was about composition and soundtrack, you know? So that's the way he approached it. It wasn't like the ego trip of, I'm going to play all the parts myself. You know, it was, I want this to sound full and rich.
Yeah. Well, and I guess one obvious one that is in that same camp, as a matter of fact, I know he was one of your favorites because I remember the news of his death not going down terribly well. But another bass player. I mean, how about Hoss Entwistle? Dude could play anything.
Yeah, but he didn't play drums.
No, that's true. Yeah. I don't, not that I remember anyway. Yeah.
He had Keith Moon behind him for most of it, you know?
Right. But I mean, could switch from, you know, you see him standing there in front of a keyboard with the bass still hanging around his neck, just playing the thing like crazy. And it's like, wow, okay.
And he was a really good guitar. In fact, on the song Trick of the Light on For You, that's him playing all the guitars. I think Townsend said, there's a guitar in there somewhere, but I don't know why I bothered.
That's a great quote.
He goes, you know, that's John with a nine, like his, there's like nine guitars in there.
Yeah.
And then one for Townsend for good measure, basically. So just think about the fullness and the fatness of that particular track, but not a drummer. Alex Chilton tried it, I would say, very ramshackle on his first solo album, Like Flies on Sherbert.
Okay.
Not a great drummer.
But he did it.
But he did it, you know, and certainly his first solo single was promising because his drumming is pretty crackerjack on it, Bangkok.
Okay.
But at least he put out an album playing all the parts himself, you know.
Yeah, and
you think, but
Rundgren is the only other one that I immediately think of as being able to play anything.
Yep, he is, because how many albums did he do like that? Oh, let's see, you know, Something Anything.
Right.
I mean, we could just stop right there. It's a double up.
So,
I saw the light, you know?
Yeah. But it is, I mean, there's, you know, again, there's something just amazing about that, about having that ability to understand music so well that all you need to do is take a look at something and go, oh, yeah, I know how that works.
I am in that mindset of when I record my solo album, because I'm the laziest bastard on the planet, I am going to be playing all the parts myself, but I really need to sit down and play drums for a while to get the feel.
Right.
Yeah. I haven't played for a long time behind a drum kit. It's very easy to pick up guitars, bass, and keyboards because I have them right here in front of me. Drums are another story entirely. You know, I can play nine instruments, but that doesn't necessarily mean I can play them all well.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the Punchline, the original lineup, was we had that kind of very positive, happy competition between myself and Carl, the bass player. He would pick up on something, I'd get pissed off, and I'd go play something else. He started fucking around with a mandolin, so I started playing an auto harp. He got an Irish drum, so I got an Irish tin whistle.
Okay.
And so on and so forth. You know, he got a violin, so I got a sitar, you know. I forgot what he got, so I got a banjo. You know, it's like, okay, enough to eke out some kind of competency, but I'm not so sure I would utilize too much of that if I was recording, unless I felt I was hearing it in my head. But it's not an easy task. That's the thing. But that's why, that's another reason why I look at it and I go, oh, I just don't have it in me. Start with plugging the guitar in, you know. It's like, okay, now I got to tune it. I got to start farting around with the sound, you know, make sure it sounds right. And is this guitar going to work for this song? McCartney does it because, A, he can just roll out of bed right in the studio himself.
Mm-hmm.
And not have to think about it. Plus, he's Paul McCartney. He's got more money than God.
Right.
And God's pretty wealthy, you know.
That's, you know, and that's good enough. And I'll tell you, I laughed a little bit when you said today's McCartney's, what is it, 76th birthday?
Yep.
Because I figure we should sign off this week with another birthday well wish, because apparently, if I'm doing the math right, when Paul McCartney turned 16, would have been the day that Jello Biafra was born.
He turned 60 today!
Yeah, that's why I said that. I just wanted to hear your Jello Biafra. Yeah. That's the only reason.
Another tricky-dicky screwdriver.
Oh, that's outstanding. So happy birthday, Jello.
I'm old Reagan.
And we won't even bring up East Bay Ray in this conversation, so.
hey, listen, I liked the Kennedys for 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody did.
But hey, come on and bleed.
Well, California Uber, all this to you, Rob Ross. We will do more of this and stuff just like it next time around.
Yet again, if the floodwaters don't rise, God willing, we will be here. So have yourself a great week. Take care of yourself and get them ACs in.